Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. And welcome to the 262nd edition of Money Matters. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today on KBMR FM radio and all the community radio stations on our affiliated members that carry the show. We're broadcasting live from the studios of KBMR FM in Nevada City, California, and rebroadcast on about 60 other stations throughout the country. Time is 12:09:26 in the year of our Lord, 2018. Happy New Year, everybody. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been on. I'm glad to come back again. Before we begin, please remember discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed today are my opinions only and the opinions of my guests in the studio. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge. This station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Today, we have a special guest in the studio today. But before we get to that, I would like to remind you, we think that we are broadcasting live on Facebook today. If we did everything right, I'm not much of a techie, but I was helped by people that know a lot more about these things than I do. So check out Mark Cuniberti, MarcCuniberti on Facebook and see if you can check us out. We're broadcasting live. We'll basically see if that works. And remember, this show is about money. As money does matter and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. It controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. Basically, it's about you. Let's say, looking at the market before we begin our special show today, Dow sits about 25,079. Now, we've talked about these major resistance and support levels. The large numbers, the Dow is the most commonly watched index, only represents 30 stocks in the whole market, but people watch the Dow the most. It's sitting at 25,079. We've mentioned before in every show, these large numbers, 24,000, 23,000. 25,000. These large numbers are what we call technical support or resistance levels. Now, there are many other smaller technical support and resistance levels, but these big ones are monumental, and some technical analysts believe that they're very significant. So we're sitting at 25,075. So we just crossed over today a major milestone, 25,000. Up 152. Now, the important thing would be that we would look at is that does this stay today? Will we stay over 25,000 today? And will it close over 25,000 at the end of the week? That's the big question. Now, no matter what you think of Donald Trump, the businesses seem to love him, right? I mean, the market has gone from 17,000 in the low, 17,000 to 25,000. What is that? 33% increase? I mean, come on, party on. There is some intrepidation with investors thinking that this thing can hold, but the market always climbs a wall of worry. When everybody is in and everybody thinks the market can go nowhere but up, that's when we run into trouble. But so far, there's still people telling me that they're worried that this market's going to crash, so nobody can tell you where the market's going to go. But my opinion is this thing's got a lot further to run. But the regulators are very squirrely about me mentioning anything like that, so I want to give the caveat. Nobody can tell you which way market's going to run, either myself or anyone else. And past performance does not indicate future movements. But we're going to keep an eye on it today for you. 25,075, up 152. Money. It's a crime. All right. So not only do we do investing in money on this show, we do investing in community, and we talk about organizations and events that are out there. Nonprofits, events happening around us. This young lady next, sitting next to me, Jen Ayala, has helped me in some of the video series in investing in community. Good morning, Jen. Thanks for joining me.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Is it afternoon yet?
It is afternoon.
Okay, well, I'm a little slow. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, but apparently not here, right?
And
well, it's
it
nice
is January
to have you.
Everywhere, so happy New Year.
Okay, good to have you.
Good to be here.
Don't F it up.
I will not.
That's lie radio. So I got don't push. You didn't push the button. Got to keep people on their toes. All right. So anyway, today we are blessed. I'm extremely blessed to have who I've called the Yoda of Ink in the studio today. His name is Mr. Philip Milik. Philip?
How's it going?
Good. Wow. Well, I ran into Philip at the gym. I saw this gentleman, very interesting looking gentleman, good smile on his face, and I approached him and he said, hey, you know, man, you've got a lot of ink on you. He says, yeah. He was a little cautious, you know. You were a little cautious. And you want to know who the hell I was. And so we finally introduced each other, and he showed me his Facebook page, and I went, wow, you're somebody. It's just incredible. So welcome to the studio today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay. And so I've got to ask you, you know, you are obviously heavily inked. Mm. And so... how much of your body is tattooed?
Maybe 75-80%.
75-80%. And Jen wanted to ask, how long did it take to do? This must have been accomplished over the years,
I
right?
I mean, some people move quicker than others. I've been getting tattooed since, you know, my first one was when I was 15 years old. So I'm 40 years old now, so...
You don't look a day over 30.
Ah, right on.
So Jen and I do have some questions for you. I know a lot of people out there. By the way, if you want to phone in and ask Philip some questions, phone numbers 530-265-9555, 530-265-9555. Let the phone ring and we'll try to get to you, Jen.
So I know listeners can't really see how awesome Phil looks, but he does have really incredible tattoos.
They may, if we got it on Facebook.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe somebody could call in and let us know whether you can see us.
You guys are very flattering.
So, Phil... what do you know about the history of tattooing? Let's start off with there. Just tell us about, you know, how long has body modification been going on in tattooing?
I mean, we've found mummies 5,000 years old that are definitely tattooed. So, I mean, as far as we can, I guess, date that.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, it's as old as writing and, yeah.
And do you know how it started? How it came to be, you know, like the first tattoos that people are getting.
I mean, I've heard theories of, you know, maybe the cave man in a sense was somehow stuck himself with a spear that had some soot on it, and so it stayed, and so from there they maybe pushed further, you know, into exploring, like keeping, you know, the ink under the skin.
Yeah, so cavemans have done it. Let's talk about when.
Well, I mean, cavemans. I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm not a historian.
I mean, just like the people from the beginning.
Yeah, but as far as tattooing goes, it predates history.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a form of art. So, Phil, when did you start tattooing?
I started tattooing. I started my apprenticeship in the summer of 1995.
Okay.
And then I finished my apprenticeship the summer of 1996, and that's when. I took on I guess, the title of a professional tattoo artist.
So it took you a year to do your apprenticeship?
About a year and 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you were doing your apprenticeship, I hear that they kind of have to tattoo themselves to practice?
Actually, I was taught that tattooing yourself, you were a fool for a customer. So,
kind of like an attorney for somebody representing themselves, right?
Yeah. So luckily, you know, I had a lot of friends that were trusting at that time, and, you know, you're young, you're wanting to do these things that are taboo, especially in the earlier 90s. So it wasn't hard to find people to practice on.
Yeah. So once your apprenticeship was over, what kind of things did you do to develop your craft as a tattoo artist?
After the apprenticeship? Can you ask me one more time?
Yeah. After your apprenticeship, what kind of things... did you do as an artist to develop your craft? Like, obviously tattooing, but what? There's got to be more that goes into it.
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of traveling through, like, you know, after I finished my apprenticeship, I pretty much left Orange County and made my way to the Bay. Mm-hmm. And then from the Bay, kind of in my 20s, I was able to, like, branch off and kind of travel the world a bit. And
so was it pretty apparent that you had a talent for tattooing from the early years?
No, like, I didn't even really consider myself an artist. And then I was, you know, pretty young, and I was just kind of bothering the folks at the tattoo shop that was in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I just kept bugging them and bugging them, and they eventually just took me on kind of like they did with a bunch of people, where they would just take on kind of like pseudo apprenticeships or apprentices just to do a bunch of free work around the shop and then eventually fire them.
Oh.
Or they would quit because it would get too intense, you know? So, so somehow I just really wanted it. Like once I was in, like I just wanted it. Mm-hmm. So I just started drawing every single day up until this point. So
you're listening to KVMR FM Money Matters. We're talking to the Yoda of Ink, Philip Millick. You can check him out on Facebook or even on the web. Just Google up his name. I'm here in the studios here with Miss Jen Ayala and Philip. So, Philip, what makes a great tattoo artist?
I guess it starts off with a good person. You know, you're putting something on somebody forever, so you want them to have a really good experience and to have a good memory with it, especially if they're, like, condoning a memory. What makes a good tattoo artist is, you know, someone who actually is an artist. That is, you know, someone who's, you know, studied within the avenue of art that they're wanting to take it, and whether it's portraits or big, bold color work or whatnot, but you'd have to actually be drawing and painting the imagery that you're going to be tattooing.
So is it pretty safe to assume that if a person can't draw, he's probably not going to be a good tattoo artist?
Again, like when you're starting off young, you have a little bit more of an ability to adapt. Mm-hmm. And if you're around good teachers, I think anybody could become a good tattoo artist. If you're starting a bit later in the game, and also maybe not getting good teachers who are not that good of artists themselves, then yeah, you're going to be hindered if you're not an artist. You're going to be making a lot of people depressed.
I guess so. I mean, I could draw a stick man. So
yeah, but that's, you never about, know. There's a big it, avenue right? of people that love stick man, and they might like your attitude, and all of a sudden you got a career out of it.
Who did the stick man? Cuda Birdie. Yeah, he's really
good.
Oh,
it's a Cuda Birdie. Yeah, shit.
So obviously, I mean, you know, and it's common knowledge that you're extremely good. And so as far as, you know, I do a lot of things and I measure against myself, and I'm, you know, not satisfied. I'm always driven. I think Miss Ayala, with her history, which we haven't covered, but is the same way. You know, she gets a lot of things done, and when she puts her mind to it, she does it. So as far as you're concerned, how do you measure your success as a tattoo artist? Are you satisfied? I know you're always working, but you know, what do you think your strong points are, and what do you think your weak points are?
I guess I measure my success a bit about how well my son is being raised. So, I mean, that's a big driving force.
So as an artist, you know, it's your whole your
sorry,
whole
guys, I'm nervous.
World.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, success could be you as a tattoo artist, or it could also be the other things that you hold dear in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very artistic way of looking at life.
Yeah, I mean, I feel successful. You know, I'm able to provide for my son. I've got a good home that I'm able to rent, and I've always been able to take care of myself. I've been able to travel, been able to be fairly independent, you know, so.
Well, Miss Jen from Dreamwalk, the DJ before me, has come into the studio. She's got a few inks on there. Miss Jen, hi.
Hi. I have a question about, like, symbology and cultural appropriation, or how everybody got the incorrect Chinese characters. And I just kind
of
want to hear your perspective on that. If somebody comes in, do you just tattoo what they want, or do you kind of have an understanding of cultural symbols? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a good
question. I think I know where you're going. Cultural appropriation has, it's a very fine line that you can walk before it starts becoming the type of appropriation where you're actually hurting and demising another culture. You know, when someone's wanting an Om symbol on them from India, and they've traveled to India and they've been invited in the homes, and although India has a lot of poverty, it also has a lot of financial ability as well. So appropriating them, necessarily appropriating a Navajo symbol or a Hopi symbol where maybe the culture is still suffering, and then you're marketing off of it and it's not part of your culture and you've never been invited in the home, you've never sat in a teepee, then it might be a little awkward, and I personally would avoid tattooing that.
So like the scantily clad stereotypical native chick with the headdress arm.
Yeah, that'd be the shadow side of appropriation, because appropriation is influence. But the shadow side of appropriation, yeah, would be that stereotype that you just said. Yeah.
And would you do something like that, or would you say you're out of here?
No, I wouldn't say you're out of here, but I wouldn't. Yeah, I'd do it in the best ways I could, and hopefully they would question me in a good way that you are, and I could come with a positive answer and positive feedback and talk them out of possibly really, you know, hurting other people's feelings.
And that's what makes him an exemplary artist.
There you go. You're listening to Money Matters right here on KVMR FM, Investing in Community
Thank
series.
You. Thank you for that.
We're
question.
Here with Philip Millick. Thank you, Miss Jen.
Sorry, I had to know, and you have an amazing person here, and I didn't know that if you had money you could walk in and a tattoo artist would tattoo anything, but that there is a consciousness and a care when it comes to this art. So
yeah, for a lot,
you rock.
Yeah, for a lot of us, hopefully, yeah.
Thank you,
Miss
Jen. I think
that kind of goes back to what you were saying about being a good person. You know, it's the number one about being a tattoo artist, and like the relationship that you have with your client coming in.
Yeah.
You can have a conversation with them at least, you know.
So yeah, Philip, yeah. Walk us through and walk us through the process. Somebody comes in and says, "I want a tattoo." Then what happens?
Okay, well, each studio is completely different. Each individual artist is completely different. So with me speaking, I guess would be speaking for the... If someone was to come into my tattoo parlor and they said, "Hey, I want a tattoo," the first discussion would be, what are you interested in? What are you looking for? And then if they had a relatively good idea, because we've got a good crew of tattooers who are wide-ranged in the styles that they do, we would then push them towards one or two, you know, of the artists that we would feel would fit with what it was that they were asking for.
Are there common designs, or is each design specific to a particular artist? In other words, well, might I go somewhere and say, "Hey, he's got the same tattoo I do"?
Yeah, I mean, there's the age-old tradition of flash, and that is a style of tattooing that is images that are on certain size pieces of paper, usually nicely framed, and they're open for the public to use. Now there's custom artwork, where if someone comes in and is very descriptive of what it is that they want, and they actually have an artist design it for them, then that would be custom. And yeah, when you're getting a custom piece, you don't want to see it on the next person next to you. Although, like say with my art, there's a lot of similarities in everything that I draw.
Mm-hmm.
So you may find something where like you're standing next to somebody and yeah, the tattoos do look very similar, but they're absolutely different.
I always grew up and always heard of Lyle Tuttle. You probably know who Lyle Tuttle is. Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's a legend.
All right. Can you name a few of the other ones besides yourself and Lyle?
I mean, there's Don Ed Hardy. There's Percy Waters. It goes back. I mean, mm-hmm. we're going back 100 years of history.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, maybe further.
Okay, we're talking to Philip Millick, Yoda of Ink, right here in the studio live. Hopefully we're on Facebook. I think we are. I'm sitting next to Miss Jenny Yala, who helps me out. And so... we'll take a brief break. We'll be right back. If you'd like to talk to Philip, you can call us live at 530-265-9555. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Welcome back to your community radio stations. My name is Mark Kunabird. I'm here with Miss Jenny Yala next to me and the Yoda of Ink, Philip Millick. So, Philip, Jen's got a few more questions. We have a lot of questions for you today. We really want to know, you know. Inquiring minds want to know.
Oh, yes, man. It's fascinating. Philip, you have a shop in Oakland.
Yes.
Tell us about your shop.
Yeah, it's a Old Crow Tattoo. It's in Oakland, California. I opened it in 2009.
How's the growth been for your shop?
It's been great. You know, I didn't get into tattooing to get rich.
Yeah.
And nor did I open up the tattoo shop. So sure, it's growing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but maybe not in the way that someone who's more of a capitalist would think it's growing.
So, like, in your opinion of success, how is it growing?
It's very successful.
Nice.
And it's growing in a way that we're creating a really awesome community.
Great. That's
real amazing friendships and family, and just a real safe place to get tattooed and do tattoos. And
which is awesome. Yeah. How many artists do you have working there?
I think right now there's 10 of us tattooing, and then there's... And there's four people who are running the front of the shop, you know, manager and then floor managers.
That's a pretty big shop.
Yeah. And then my sister as well. So, cause she does all my bookkeeping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like most shops I've been in, it's like maybe five or six max.
Yeah. It's a large space. I was able to, get the space when the market kind of hit the, you know,
yeah,
pooper and, trying to not cuss. Yeah, so I was able to get a really large space in Oakland at a time that was not a very sought out area. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and it's only grown.
Mm-hmm.
So one of our listeners wanted to ask us to ask you how you derive the price for a tattoo.
Well, I derive the price for a tattoo a bit based on my experience,
mm-hmm.
How fast I am, you know, because some artists, you know, they may charge less, but they're, you know, five times slower, mm-hmm. you know, so you end up paying more, getting a slower, you know.
Do you do like a shop price, or is it every artist sets their own price?
The shop basically like has an, I think it's $100 minimum. And then from there it goes to the individual artist, and each individual artist will base it off of their clientele, how long they've been tattooing. And you know,
yeah.
basically that.
And there's obviously that's so much that goes into it, like color and detail, mm-hmm. and, you know, placement, mm-hmm. of this. But do you have kind of a roughly how long it takes to do like a certain amount? Like,
I mean, I'm pretty good at this point at judging how long a tattoo is going to take. But because I don't want to like be going a little too long or a little too short, so I just stick to the hourly rate.
Yeah.
The rates also have a lot to do with the area that you're tattooing. I mean, tattooing in the Bay, we're going to be charging a lot more than maybe someone who's living in Fresno, you know, just because of housing and school prices and, you know.
Yeah. So I want to get kind of technical with you. I know that there's a variety of inks that tattoo artists can use. And so could you talk about the difference of like quality of ink and then how long the ink will last, and if like you can tell the difference
again, I'm not like an authority on this stuff. The science part of it, you know, you're not going to be able to get that much from me, but I do know that, you know, most pigments are a powdered pigment before they get added to anything.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are like a food grade pigment, totally non-toxic or cosmetic grade pigment. And it's just how they homogenize it with from who to who mixes. But for the most part, it's all organic materials. It's, you know, and yeah, there are some companies, if you're buying off of some really shotsy site for getting cheap tattoo equipment, you're not going to get the same pigment as if you're a professional tattoo artist going through well-established, long-running tattoo supply companies who are also holding pigment that's been standing for a long time. So, and as far as how long it lasts, I mean, till you're dead.
Yeah. They are permanent,
yeah.
aren't they?
Yeah, they're permanent.
All right. So is that something that somebody that's looking to get a tattoo needs to even be concerned about when they're going into a shop and, like, you know, checking on the equipment and on the things? Or do you guys have such a good practice? And, you know, it seems like most shops have reputation and that's what it's kind of based off of.
I wouldn't be stressed on what was in the ink. I mean, there are some people who are like a more hardcore vegan type, who are going to be a little bit more, you know, wanting to make sure their inks are, you know, vegan or whatever the basis of it doesn't have any like animal byproduct or didn't go through any. So, and there are companies out there that do that. And
that's cool.
But I would be more concerned on just the relative cleanliness of the shop. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and it's not so much like hepatitis or AIDS, but staph. Like getting a really bad staph infection is definitely a huge concern. I mean, obviously the other two as well, but staph is going to be the one that could come up if the shop is unsanitary.
So yeah, that brings me to my next question, Phil. What other problems can arise besides staph?
Like as far, are you talking about like physical or just emotional?
Yeah, well, well, physical, I guess staph would be the main.
I mean, really,
problem.
That is the, in the 23 years of me, 24 years being in a tattoo shop, the only thing I've ever seen or heard of was somebody getting a staph infection. Mm-hmm. But it was really hard to pinpoint whether they got it after the tattoo or during the tattoo. So, because afterwards, we can't, you know, once that bandage comes off, they get onto a public bus, they go to a rave that night or a club or whatever.
And what people don't realize is that's like a, you know, it's a wound, it's an open
area,
exactly, and they need to treat it and like heal it properly. Yeah, and they
gotta treat it like that. Exactly.
What other problems can go wrong as far as, but you mentioned psychological.
I mean, I've seen people spell things wrong. You know,
no regrets, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, someone had, they thought they got just breathe, but it just said just breath.
Oh, jeez. So that can be fixed.
Or the classic, you know.
Yeah, I mean, some stuff. Yeah, it can always be fixed if the person's willing to go that extra mile to get it fixed.
How many colors can be used? I usually see blue, but you know, but I don't see a lot
of. It's endless at this point.
Really?
There's not one color you can't think, or at least you visibly can see in the spectrum that can't be used or blended.
Anybody have fluorescent tattoos, glow in the dark?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. That's been around for a long time.
What happens if you get somebody who says, I don't like it?
Well, you know, I mean, if they don't like it, you know, it always hurts. Every once in a while you get someone that's not quite as happy, or maybe they're imagining something more grandeur, and in the end it wasn't quite the fantasy they were thinking the situation was going to be. And there's not much you can do in that moment other than, you know, either they get it lasered or they find someone else to fix it or, you know, yeah.
We're speaking to Philip Millick, tattoo aficionado and expert in the studios here at Money Matters Investing Community. I'm sitting with Jen Ayala, and we were live on Facebook for a while, but we're going to try to get that feedback up, so we'll take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Pretty bells on my toes. Now it's coming off my
Just can't get enough Warrant, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's good stuff.
My name's Mark Cunaberti. You're listening to Money Matters right here on your community radio stations. I'm in studio with Jen Ayala and Master of Tattoo, Philip Millick. So thanks for joining us again today, Philip. And it looks like we have a couple of calls, so let's take a call or two. Either one, Jen, is fine. Hold on. There we go. And push that one. There we go. You're live on the air with Philip Millick and Money Matters.
Hey, this is great. Thank you for putting me on the air. I've been speaking with Miss Jen about my questions, which she gave me some answers to. They're on both sides of the spectrum. The first one was, have you removed tattoos from people who've gotten them who thought later maybe this isn't the best tattoo, or perhaps helped someone who had been cutting themselves and then wanted to have something done with the scar so that it was now a beautiful tattoo instead of a reminder of a point in their life that may have not been the happiest one? And then I'll ask my other question, which is at the other end of the spectrum, which Jen kind of gave me an idea of what might happen. And that's, I met someone who was very tatted up, and they said at the end of their life they would like to have their back, which is really sort of a just incredible tat, removed so they can save it, and since they consider it a piece of art. And Miss Jen said it's doable, but maybe so taboo that you'd have to proceed in a way that's nuanced. I'm not sure. These are questions I've always had.
Well, I'm ready to answer them.
All right, thanks for your phone call.
Okay, so I've never personally removed someone's tattoo. I've definitely recommended people to laser institutes, to get tattoos either removed or lightened so that they could get a new tattoo over the old tattoo. It's pretty difficult to remove tattoos completely, so a lot of times most people nowadays are just getting them lightened up and then getting something a little bit more thoughtful for their next one and a little more researched on the artist that they were going to get. As far as tattooing over people who are cutters, definitely done it many times. It doesn't always take away the scarring, so there's still always that little bit of a reminder, but at least they put something beautiful on it and showed, you know, to themselves and possibly those that see it that they've gone through a transformation and a change. And then as far as people removing tattoos and having them preserved, it's been happening for a long time, especially in Japan, and I'm not sure if it's still the case, but there was a point where you could basically get paid $10,000, I think it was like $10,000, there was a museum, I forget who was doing it, but it was like a group of people in Japan, I think they were offering $10,000 to basically, they give it to you, and then when you passed away, they had rights to your body.
Hmm. So, talking about health effects of tattoos, do you know of any?
I've been hearing a little bit of talk that, like, the more you get tattooed, the more your immune system builds.
I also heard that it's hard for your liver to process the ink if you're, like, completely covered. Have you heard of that?
Again, I think maybe if people are working with some toxic inks, which is pretty hard if you're in a tattoo environment. You know, professional tattoo environments, pretty impossible to start tattooing yourself with heavily toxic inks.
So
I know they were saying that about, I think some of the Yakuza or something like that, they were saying that their livers were failing and so da da da. But you got to understand, these people party pretty hard. Mm. They've got a pretty intense lifestyle to begin with before even the tattoos. We've also now had people with bodysuits, getting bodysuits for well over 100 years just here in the Americas. And there's not people dropping like flies because of liver failure, because the ink, they can't process it or this
it's
or that.
It's definitely probably from something
else. Yeah.
What about like weight gain and weight loss and aging for the skin?
You'd have to have like extremities. Like you'd have to lose or gain a lot of weight. In order to see like stretch marks or an effect to the elasticity of your skin. Mm-hmm. Again, that also can be hereditary. Some women and men have stretch marks more than others. And like my kid's mom, she's had two children. I tattooed her ribs and stomach. And And, you know, she has no stretch marks, and the tattoos on her belly part and on the ribs and everything were absolutely fine. But then I've seen other people come in with pretty heavy stretch marks where, yeah, that definitely affected the tattoo.
Mm-hmm. Just something to keep in mind. What about raised tattoos? How does that happen?
Raised tattoos usually due to a little bit of scarring. And that happens because either, you know, the machine is run a little too hard, the person's skin can be relatively more sensitive. There's just some people's skin types that keloid a little easier. Mm-hmm.
What about the purposeful ones? I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Jen, but the purposeful ones that are actually raised, you see a lot on athletes on the football field.
I think you're seeing them raised.
They look like actually
purpose.
Just burn.
Some of them are getting the scarification with the burning and stuff.
Oh,
like that.
Oh, okay, that's
sure.
different. Okay, yeah, describe that. Different. How does that work?
I've had it done. Yeah, people take soldering irons, you take a hanger and bend it into a shape. And
you're going to have to show me.
You know? Oh, man.
But I've had it done to myself in a similar fashion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so was it more painful than getting a regular tattoo?
It was really quick, and my sensation to, say, fire or to something hot versus something cold, which is how I could more describe a tattoo needle. You know, tattoo, you're in it for a while, so it becomes a lot more extreme, you know, but with the getting scarification, it's usually a relatively quick.
Yeah. Is there any such thing as removal of scarification? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
They do a process where they can, like, I know in hospitals with burn victims, it's called needling. Mm-hmm. And what they do is kind of similar to tattooing, and they just run a needle over the scar tissue.
Oh, that's really cool.
And even use, I think nowadays, some of them are using tattoo machine-like things. And what it does is it can help flatten out the myofascia and all the scar tissue.
Whoa, that's really incredible.
And sometimes when you're covering an old tattoo that was scarred, if it's a large enough piece of a cover-up, sometimes if you've got to hit it a few times, it can actually even out the scar.
Mm-hmm. You turn to Money Matters right here on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cunaberdi on Investing in Community. We're speaking with Philip Millick, an expert in tattoo, and next to me, Miss Janiella, who helps us out here at the studios. And we had to have a live Facebook feed, but we can't seem to get that back up. So there you go. What are the most complicated tattoos that you've done, like the longest sessions and the most challenging?
It's whenever you've got to do the exact same thing on the other side of the body. Those are extremely challenging. Things that, like, wrap around from one side of the throat to the back of the neck, and you want to make every single point to line up perfect, mm-hmm. and then you're dealing with the body, which is not a perfect shape. You know, each side of the body is a little bigger, a little smaller, you know, so.
It's very interesting that you say that, because that's pretty much, like, your go-to style, and what you're kind of known for is that symmetrical, like, beautiful line work stuff. So it's interesting that you think that's the most challenging and that's what you go for.
Yeah. I'm nervous to this day before every tattoo.
You are?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. At least 5 to 10 minutes before.
Really?
5, 10 minutes as the tattoo's going. Once I'm in about, once I hit that 10, 15 minutes into the tattoo, usually I can start breathing.
You're in the zone.
Depending on how much celebrating happened the night before.
By the way, if you'd like to talk to Philip and you're listening to this broadcast live, obviously if you're listening recorded another day, we're broadcasting live January 4th, 2018, 12:47 p.m. Pacific Standard. You can call us at 530-265-9555. And so let me ask you this, Philip. What's the longest session you've ever had? Or if it's so long, do you do it in like 2 days?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we'll tattoo people for a few days in a row if need be, you know, if they're traveling from another state or another country. I think the longest I've tattooed someone straight, like, maybe like 9.5 to 10 hours, you know. I've had people, or I guess maybe recently someone got tattooed around 11 hours. It was like a combination tattoo with me and another artist.
Somebody told me they had a tattoo this big took 8 hours. It sounds like a long time for.
I mean, tattoos can easily that size. Yeah.
What about, have you ever seen, are there bad artists? Where somebody walks in and you go, oh, man.
I mean, it's, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So, yeah. You know, since I'm the beholder of myself, then, yeah, there's a lot of bad tattooers and a lot of bad artists.
Right. Are you going to get any more?
So I guess I still got about that 20%, 10% left.
Sure. And by the way, we're planning to do a film Philip and
down at the studio. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you ever want to, you know, keep people on the toes, you say things they don't expect you to say and do things they don't expect you to do. So we'll probably take a trip down to Oakland and do the film down there. Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep people on their toes that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think you'll be impressed.
Are there any health concerns?
We've got a half pipe in the backyard.
We still may do it up here. I don't know. It depends on what kind of mood I'm in. Is there any health concerns for you as a tattoo artist?
I mean,
long term?
Yeah, because that's why I started the gym a couple months ago. Like, I realized, you know, I turned 40 years old. You know, I definitely had a good time.
Oh, God, that's really old, Phil.
I'm just saying, like, for me it is. And so it's been, you know, I definitely had a good time. So it was, you know, my body did start to feel a little weird, like just sitting all day. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden it would be like 16 hours out of my day. I'm just sitting, drawing, tattooing, like not really moving. And I used to b-boy back in the day. So I used to be really avid and very expressive
that.
On a dance floor. And,
really?
And so when I opened up the shop, I kind of like walked away from that and went into more dad mode. And you know, the shop was a little stressful at first. And so now, yeah, like I started getting like maybe a little bit of arthritis in my fingers and some weird stuff was going on with my elbow. So, but after I started the gym, like pretty much everything's gone. It's like I'm feeling like, it's like my body's just responding really fast. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there are health concerns, or it's not much different than anybody's office job. You know,
right.
We're sitting down all day in weird positions, stressed, hoping that this person is going to walk away happy, you know, plus the hours of drawing that went into it prior to even seeing the client, you know, it's like, yeah. So
at the beginning of our conversation, we talked about how long tattoos and body augmentation has been around.
Yeah,
pretty much since
predates
the beginning
history.
Of man.
Yeah.
And recently, as in like the past couple hundred years, tattoos were kind of frowned upon, and now it seems like tattoos are much more accepted. Mm. Have you noticed any big changes in how people perceive you, like when you're out and about? Like, are you noticing the change in
here in Nevada City? I see that people notice me with tattoos more than say if I'm in the Bay, the Bay Area. Since I've been there, has always been like, you know, one of the leading places in you know, high-end tattooing and large-scale work. So but yeah, once it hit the television, I mean, that was it. You know, it became a pop culture. And so,
because I know, like, when I was like, I've got a lot of tattoos, and when I was trying to go, you know, get a job or something like that, even just 10 years ago or so, people were like, oh, nobody's gonna hire you with these tattoos or anything like that. And now it doesn't seem like it's a big deal. You even see officers with tattoos.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we're tattooing lawyers, doctors, school teachers, priests, I mean, you name it. So but you know, it's a part of our DNA. If you think our DNA records history of like all your ancestry, then sure, it would make sense that everybody's wanting, or not everybody, but that it's become a little bit more acceptable, especially with the television, especially with certain media personnel, people, you know, of high ranks that have them. And all of a sudden, you know, people start feeling like, okay, it's okay. It's not quite as taboo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I don't know if I answered that in the best way.
No, it was good.
Yeah, it was good. So who have you tattooed or drawn designs for that people may know?
I mean, I know I've tattooed some celebrity type people, but I always forget, because I honestly do not look at anybody as anybody different from anyone else. Right.
What's the weirdest tattoo you ever did, or is there one, or was it the weirdest spot?
The worst tattoo I think I the worst tattoo I ever did. I don't know. None of them are that strange or like.
What about the weirdest spot?
Weirdest spot. I don't know. The body is like so exquisite to me. So there's not a weird spot on the mm-hmm. body. So it's not, I couldn't answer that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for somebody to get a tattoo from
you? But I did one time, when I was apprenticing, none of the guys in the shop wanted to do the tattoo. And a guy came in and he wanted 100% white boy tattooed on his neck. And I said, oh, okay, well, what kind of letters? He says, I want white boy letters. I said, well, what are white boy letters? He's like, just how you'd write them. So I think that was probably one of the funniest and worst tattoos I think I ever had to do.
Somebody walks in the shop, can they get inked by you, or they got to wait a couple of years? I understand there's a couple of year wait.
It's real interesting with me because, you know, it's real interesting. Like, you can... There's times where people walk right in and get tattooed from me right then and there.
Lucky.
And it does happen. And then there's those, but yeah, usually there's a bit of a wait. Yeah.
Bit of a wait. Okay, so tell us where your shop is.
My shop is in Oakland. Mm-hmm. It's 362 Grand Avenue mm-hmm. in Oakland, California, across the street from Lake Merritt.
Okay, but you live up here because your kid lives here.
Yeah, yeah, my son lives
and,
up. Yeah,
and if we decide to do the film up here, you can ink up here.
Oh, I can definitely do tattoos.
Okay, we're going to do a film on Philip, and Jen has volunteered.
But it'd be worth having you guys come out to the shop. It's 2,000 square foot space.
Okay.
Really amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jen has volunteered her body to get a tattoo.
All right.
She's going to get a spider, right?
No. That'd still be too.
I've got a tarantula at the shop.
There you go.
Her name is Honey.
Yeah. No, that was not going to happen. Yeah. Okay. Well, Philip, we're coming to the end of the show. But did you want to say anything else or add
anything?
Do
you have like an Instagram, Facebook?
Yeah, I've got an Instagram, which is PM Tattoos. That's PMTATTOOS. PM Tattoos. And then through that, you can link into my Philip S. Millick, where it's pronounced Millich, but Philip S. Millick. Account as well, and it's a private account that I just kind of I make sure that the people that are coming on are like real human. So
yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, sounds good. Philip, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
All right. Thanks.
Jen, did you want to add
thank you guys
today?
For having me.
Yeah, just thanks for coming out. It was a great conversation.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, Philip Millick of Old Crow Tattoo, Jen Ayala, Investing Community. My name is Mark Cunabrudi. I'd like to tell you the next show for Money Matters is January 18th, 2018. And we'll probably be covering the markets at that time. In February, we'll be covering adoption. And just remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as a specific recommendation or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only and the opinions of my guests today, Mr. Philip Millick and Ms. Jen Ayala. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This has been Show 262, the Philip Millick Interview, the Yoda of Inc. Thanks for joining me. God bless. Stay tuned for further programming.